on Indie 101.5 CIOI.
Good evening, everybody, and happy Tuesday. And thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, a radio show where I interview local musicians, artists, and just music scene professionals based in the GTHA. So tonight, I am hanging out with David Kaufman of Dirty Rick. David is the frontman of the Toronto-based band Dirty Rick. He is a... an osteopathy graduate and a mental health advocate. You can find David on Instagram as Howlin' Frog and the band on all socials and streaming services under Dirty Rick. So, hey, David.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, no problem. And congrats on graduating.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. How long was that program?
It was a 4-year program. Mm-hmm. I started... in the fall of 2016, I took a year off, somewhere in 2017 to 2018, as part of a mental health refresh, let's call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long time coming. I did an undergrad at McMaster before as well. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming. I'm very excited to be done.
Yeah, well, congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just to give you a little bit of an introduction to everybody listening, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
Mine or the band's?
You could do both. You could do yourself individually first and then the band.
Okay. So I started as kind of a bit of a karaoke bar star when I first started wanting to get into singing. So I would sing all of my favorites. By The Doors, stuff by Nirvana, stuff by Green Day. And really my goal was to kind of emulate those, specifically the live performances of some of my favorite frontmen. So there's three of them right there, Billy Joe and Jim Morrison and Kurt Cobain. And for me, it's, you know, really about the energy. So, you know, the first concert I ever went to was Green Day, and him, Billy Joe, just running around the stage like a madman, really spoke to me in a, like, look at how free and fun that guy is. And that was always something I wanted to do, if I ever got the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of singing itself, definitely somewhere more in that blues shouter, kind of Jim Morrison, vein is kind of where I sit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's other singers that I like to take after, like Alex Turner from Arctic Monkeys,
mm-hmm.
With that, you know, the low drawl that he's got going on. Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, Kurt Cobain and some of the more yelly stuff, as I mentioned him earlier. And really, it's just taking those pieces, those people that have inspired me, and trying to, like, fit them into some weird jigsaw puzzle. But, yeah, I definitely, my voice can do all kinds of weird things, and I'm still exploring a lot of what it can do. You know, I naturally sit a little lower, but I'm working on getting some of that higher register working for myself. And in terms of the band, I like to describe it as taking a lot of influence from, like, early 2000s rock, alternative rock. So stuff like Arctic Monkeys, Queens of the Stone Age, Black Keys, when all those bands were first starting up. You know, you toss in like some Libertines, as somebody pointed out to me the other day. I actually really agree with that. Mm-hmm. That assessment, like, you take those kind of bands, those blues rock kind of alt rock, rock revival, whatever you want to call it, and then you throw in like just a little bit of that 80s fun, like AC/DC, you know, and really the big thing that I have and that the band has as a goal is to make people have fun. So we look at these bands where they get their crowds rocking, they get their people moving, and singing along and having fun. Overall, it's an escape for all of us, a positive, good kind of escape, but it's an escape, as musicians and as patrons, you know, to lose yourself in the music for a little while. So that's always front of mind for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember what you grew up listening to, like what your family played around the house, and what sort of impact did those early influences have on your current style?
Yeah, so we were kind of all over the place. When I was younger, like I discovered like rock music and like my own taste for music. I was probably about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So before that, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of the radio, a lot of pop music that my mom likes, and a lot of like 80s rock that my dad likes. So, you know, with my mom, pretty much whatever was on the radio, and then you throw in some Beatles and you throw in some like Elton John and like that kind of stuff. I remember hearing like some of that when I was younger. And then with my dad, he especially, he was my brothers and I played hockey when we were younger, and so he would, you know, on the way to hockey, show us like pump up songs like Guns N' Roses, and then he, you know, he was really, really into REM, so he showed us that kind of stuff. And yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, my music taste has evolved with theirs. So funny enough, like when I started getting into music, that was when, you know, like they started kind of taking my recommendations. As young as like 10, 11, I'd be showing them stuff. They'd be showing me stuff. And yeah, it's cool to look back on that, because even though some of the styles, you know, maybe it's not what I would choose to listen to every day, there's always a spot, you know, there's always a nice warming in my heart when I hear Losing My Religion by REM, or, you know, I'll hear, there's that multitude of artists that I'll hear and I'll think of my mom. And yeah, it's, you know, I think even though like neither of them are musicians and neither of them, you know, necessarily tried to expose me to a vast, you know, array of music, it definitely impacted me. And, you know, yeah, as young as like 10 years old when I started like borrowing CDs from my friends, and, you know, that was in the LimeWire era. So, you know, mm-hmm. I took over the family computer and started downloading many, many MP3s and also viruses and all kinds of fun stuff. You know, so like it definitely shaped the my music fandom, mm-hmm. if you will, to mm-hmm. like have exposure to music when I was younger.
Yeah. What got you first into playing music? Did you start on any instruments? Did you start with vocals? What did you begin with?
So, yeah, when I was a kid, I never really took music lessons. Mm-hmm. I took like a beginner guitar class in high school because that was something they were offering. Mm-hmm. I was in my high school LA and elementary bands as in the percussion section. And I learned how to read music, but it was more of a theoretical knowledge as opposed to a like practice applied knowledge.
Right.
But then, yeah, like towards the end of high school and towards university, like I kind of, you know, I didn't have the skills to continue, and I didn't, it wasn't really something that I cherished the way that I maybe do now. Mm-hmm. You know, I was focused on getting through high school to get to university and getting the marks and getting the grades and, you know, which classes I was taking were going to affect that. So I started singing. Like, I mean, I've sung, probably the first time I sung on stage, I was 12, but it was always kind of more for fun. You know, there was elementary like arts night and like, you know, I had a few experiences where, you know, at parties, or bigger parties, there were opportunities to sing. And so I did that, and I would sing Green Day, or I'd sing Simple Plan, or I'd sing something along those lines. But, I started getting into actually singing and really taking it seriously. That would have been 2016 when I ran a charity rock concert through my fraternity that I was in at McMaster. And as part of that, I got my friends who were in a band in high school to play it. And I also played in a separate group. We were just a cover group made up of friends of mine from McMaster. And, well, they needed a singer. So I guess, you know, I'll organize the show and I'll also jump up on stage and sing a few. And so that was my first time, like, singing multiple songs on stage as part of a group that had rehearsed. And then a year later, at the same show, the second iteration of it, my friends came back as a band that had started playing again, and I jumped up with my cover group, and evidently they liked what they saw, because by the end of the night, I was in their band. That's kind of how Dirty Rick started. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started singing. Like, I really hadn't started really taking it seriously, you know, outside of karaoke bars and, you know, singing in the shower and singing in my car. And until I was in a band, and then I'm like, crap, I guess I gotta learn how to sing. Mm-hmm. And so our old guitarist, Alan, wrote up a curriculum for me, and I started, you know, practicing and learning about scales and learning about, you know, how to breath control and how to expand my range a little bit and how to have, you know, how to make what I wanted to make come out of my mouth, if that makes any sense. You know, how, mm-hmm. like the sound that I was thinking about in my head, how to make that actually, transpire. And yeah, and then once that was, you know, I got my way through that. It was about 6 months after the band started that we started playing shows. And for the most part, it's been learn on the fly.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
There we go. When did you start creating music? So was that with Dirty Rick? And what year was that?
So I started writing poetry. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, it was all chaos. It was all, you know, really disjointed. I didn't really have an aim for what I was doing. I was just trying to write down stuff because mm-hmm. it helped me feel better. I was in a bit of a mental health, I wouldn't call it a crisis, but I was definitely starting to spiral. It evolved into a crisis, but, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So poetry and then subsequently writing music really helped me. It really helped me get these feelings that were in my brain on paper. And that became the focus for most of my writing, was about how I would feel and the emotional, you know, kind of toll that that life was having on me at that point. And then my writing started to get a little more structured. Mm-hmm. About when I started joining the band, I would write in like kind of song format. So write a verse, write a chorus, have that chorus repeat. And eventually I started writing, and like, I can't really play any instruments to the point where I could write on them, you know? So I would write a verse, chorus, another verse, and then I would send it off to one of the guys and say, hey, like, do you think there's anything here? Like, and they'd be like, well, what, you know, what key is it in? What, anything? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, you figure that out. I'm just words guy for now. And some of our songs actually, you know, came that way. And as it's evolved, so that would have been 2017, like right from the beginning. And I remember writing Doomsday, the first, like the chorus to Doomsday, on a beach while I was traveling and while I was learning to sing. And, you know, the words definitely changed, from the original verses that I had sent, but the chorus more or less stayed intact. And that started becoming kind of the blueprint where it's like, okay, if there's anything salvageable here, let, you know, start a song with that and I can write the rest. So, you know, I'm not the primary songwriter, in Dirty Rick.
Mm-hmm.
We do a really good job of kind of passing it along. There's some songs that Christoph has written, our bassist. There's certain songs that Alan, our old guitarist, wrote, and Alex has written a few for us as well. And, it's great. We kind of come to the band with ideas and we'll kind of weigh in. We'll be like, oh, is this, you know, how do we feel about this? And, you know, it needs a little of that. And, you know, so somebody will write a song and it'll be maybe 50% done. And then we'll kind of add our own flair and our own spice to it. And it's really cool being part of that process. Mm-hmm. As the years have gone on, I have a little more to say, a little more to do with it.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time that you played live, and how was that experience, and how was your confidence?
So the first time that I played live with Dirty Rick, because mm-hmm. I've talked about a few of those earlier formative experiences where I jumped up on stage with mm-hmm. bands that hadn't rehearsed, and, you know, and then I talked about the charity concert, and that was, I guess, technically the first time that I played live mm-hmm. With a band, but I'll expand a little bit about the Dirty Rick experience. So mm-hmm. we played our first show, I want to say it was July of 2017 at the Smiling Buddha. Don't think that bar exists anymore. I could mm-hmm. be wrong about that. But we played in the basement, so not even on the stage. We were on mm-hmm. the floor. I don't know if you've ever been there, but, you know, no. It's a real small room with a bar in the back and, like, no, you know, there's no soundproofing or anything. It's just a square room, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so the sound would, it's like playing in your basement. Like, the sound would jump off the walls and hit you in the face. And I don't remember too much from that night,
okay.
Specifically, but I do remember the feeling afterwards, because the whole show itself, you know, we'd been practicing for months and we felt good about it. And, you know, my goal wasn't to be an amazing singer that night. My goal was to have awesome energy and, be able to, you know, interact with the crowd and interact with the band and let them do their thing. And I'm going to just, you know, like a runaway train, hold on for dear life and try not to screw up too bad. And the feeling afterwards of like, whoa, I can do that. And that was the greatest feeling. And how can I get more of that? I will tell you that being on stage is the most powerful drug that personally I've ever experienced. And I've heard a lot of musicians say the same thing where, you know, you get up there and, you know, obviously at this first show, it wasn't happening quite like this, but you get up there and people know the words to your songs and people are having fun and people are dancing. To be able to give other people that experience mm-hmm. and to have that experience for yourself is just about the most powerful experience mm-hmm. that I've ever had. And the most, I liken it to a drug, because the second that I got off stage, I'm like, okay, I got to get more of that. In a really good way, you know, and, you know, we started playing more shows. We played a few more in 2017 before we really ramped up in 2018 and started playing, you know, once a month or twice a month, depending on where we could get shows booked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where did you grow up, and when did you end up coming around the sort of Toronto and Hamilton scenes?
So I grew up in Richmond Hill, mm-hmm. which is a suburb of Toronto, 45-minute Viva bus away from the subway. So, mm-hmm. you know, to get, and I started going to the local, like, Toronto music scene. I had some friends, multiple groups that, that I was, friends with in high school. So I would go and watch their shows, and the pre-Dirty Rick, pre-incarnation of Dirty Rick was mm-hmm. a high school band that, that played, you know, so I started taking these bus rides down to downtown and, you know, Velvet Underground and the Alma Combo and Sound Academy, which is now Rebel, and, you know, all these cool bars that, you know, now all these years later, I've played a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, none of those, but mm-hmm. but some other really cool ones, Sneaky yeah. D's and the Hard Luck Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was probably, I was 15, 16 when I started frequenting the Toronto music scene, the all-ages shows mostly, and then whichever big bands that were coming around that were playing all-ages shows,
mm-hmm.
You know, at the ACC or the Rogers Center. And then I graduated from high school and I went to McMaster University, and that's when, you know, I moved to Hamilton, and I ended up staying in Hamilton for the most part on and off until a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So especially towards the end of my undergrad is when I started exploring, like, outside of Westdale, outside of campus, like, towards downtown Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd gone to Super Crawl every year, and I'd watch some of the bands play there, but I hadn't really gone to the Casbah, hadn't really gone to the Doors, like, any of those places yet. And, yeah, about fourth-year university, in and around me deciding to create that charity show, you know, I saw a few bands play at the Casbah. And I believe I went to the Corktown as well before I had ever been in a band or played. The Doors, I had never been there until I played it. And we actually were there last week. Pretox was playing there with a few other bands from Ottawa and Kingston and another band from Hamilton called Rat Parade. So we were there. It was my first time inside the Doors in over 2 years.
Yeah.
And I love that place. I love that place, even though, you know, maybe you don't get the greatest sounding show there. You get a mm-hmm. lot of fun. It's really easy to interact with the crowd because they're right at the same level as you. But yeah, so, you know, once I started really playing, that's when I got integrated into the Hamilton music scene.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen too many shows, like a handful here and there. But it's awesome, and it's great being back out, you know, back out there and seeing shows and playing shows and seeing people that I haven't seen in years do their thing. And there's so many bands that don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, now post pandemic, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of us that are still doing our thing. So mm-hmm. it's good to see that.
Yeah. Speaking of musicians who are still doing their thing, who are some local artists that you think deserve more spotlight? And that's kind of local, like GTA and Hamilton area, anywhere kind of around here.
Yeah. So I remember the last time I was on this radio show, mm-hmm. I plugged Pretox and Heather Valley,
yeah.
and I would continue to plug those two, but mm-hmm. I have definitely a few more. So one band is for sure the Commoners.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing with them very soon. We'll get into that later on, but, April 16th in case you need multiple reminders, but the Commoners are awesome. They play like this Southern blues revival is how I would describe it, but
yeah.
they're so creative on stage, very charismatic. We played with them at the Horseshoe a few months ago, and we were warming up downstairs while they were playing for part of the show, so we missed a few songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up the stairs and I swore that they were playing a Pink Floyd cover, but apparently it was one of their own. Like I kept going around to people like, was that Pink Floyd? Like,
yeah.
that was really cool. Like, you know, they had a bow. He was playing the guitar with a bow, kind of like Jimmy Page at one point, and, you know, just all this really cool stuff. So I definitely would say, they're one of those bands. Another one being Ellis in Transit, actually, who mm-hmm. we saw for the first time when we played the last show at the Corktown. Mm-hmm. They're really, really cool.
They're super cool.
Yeah, we were together at that show, actually, so you yeah. can corroborate my my experience there.
I can.
Yeah, I think, you know, Alex has such a great voice, and they play this, like, it really fits with the modern sound right now, where it, like, it's fun, but it's also reflective, and it's also, like, you know, it's powerful, but it's also subdued at times. Like, they're playing on a lot of different spectrums of music, so I really enjoyed seeing them. We've been following each other on Instagram, the two accounts, Ellis in Transit and Dirty Rick, for ages, because, you know, just Hamilton bands, oh, we'll lend some support, but we never played a show, and I had never seen them play, but they were amazing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I would circle back and say, even though I'm a little biased because our guitarist Alex is also in pre-talks, I would say that they never disappoint, and they played a show last night. Today's Sunday when we're recording this, so they played Saturday night at the Bovine in Toronto, and from all accounts, it looked like an awesome show. I couldn't make it, but I saw them play the week before at the Doors, and I feel like more people should be there watching their shows. That's kind of how I feel about really a lot of local music, but mm-hmm. specifically with them, I always think, like, you know, and you know, it's not to say there's nobody there, obviously, but mm-hmm. like, I don't know why they're not bigger, other than, you know, the fact that it's tough as a local musician. It has nothing to do with them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, honestly, there's so many great artists going right now. Another one I guess I'll plug is Revive the Rose,
yeah.
Who we also played with at the last Corktown show.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's just such a go-getter. That guy, you know, he sets his mind on something and he gets it done and he accomplishes it. And now, you know, since the first time we played with them in 2019, they've grown like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've got a song on the Maple Leafs pregame warm-up playlist, and they've got, you know, Bar Down Lager, and they've got the Bar Down Beer Fest. And they've got all this crazy stuff going on, and so, you know, music circulating, but like, they've really tapped into the idea that it's not just about the music, even though the music and the substance is super important, the most important thing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you do with your marketing? What mm-hmm. else? How do you get into those other places? How do you create a name for yourself that isn't just, hey, we're playing a show, hey, we're releasing a song? You know, so they've got the beer, they've got the festival, they've got, you know, Andy runs his own management company as well. So I have endless, you know, praise for him as a musician and a, like, a music scene advocate and worker.
Mm-hmm. So if you could collaborate with anybody, and I mean total dream collaboration, so, you know, go big on that one. Who would you choose?
They have to be alive?
Maybe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe alive. Well, that changes, I guess, some things.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, if I had to choose, you know, dead or alive, I would say basically just be Jim Morrison,
mm-hmm.
but and then play with the other guys in the Doors. That'd mm-hmm. be awesome. But mm-hmm. if we're saying they have to be alive, mm-hmm. I've always had a dream, and I think I spoke about this last night too, of being a co-front person with a female vocalist as well, mm-hmm. and creating that dynamic. So, you know, I'm pretty sure I said this last time too, but honestly, I'd love to be a co-front person with Florence Welsh from Florence and the Machine.
Right.
She's excellent, and she's putting out some new music now, and it's very creative and very captivating, emotional stuff. And if I had to choose somebody else, honestly, like, a lot of them are like, oh, I'd love to be, you know, the front person of this band, but then that means I'm replacing my favorite part of that band. So I don't know. I mean, to be able to collaborate in any kind of way with Green Day or, you know, Foo Fighters or any of those kind of bands would obviously be a dream come true. So I think I'll stick with that too.
Yeah, totally. And who is someone you love to collab with who's local?
There's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many. But again, like, I think the you know, keeping it in that same kind of, like, you know, guest vocalist kind of vein. So if I was to be a guest vocalist on somebody's song and do a duet or something, Heather, for sure, would be near the top of my list. Revive the Rose would be on that list, you know, just to have, you know, have that kind of experience would be amazing. Oh man, there's so many. honestly, yeah, those would probably be my top two.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of, like, you know, maybe co-writing a song and collaborating in that kind of sense, another favorite of mine is Chintia from Chintia and the Eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Montreal artist, but she's, you know, she plays Toronto shows every once in a while. So if that counts as local, then certainly. If you're not following her on Instagram, she's a great follow about the artistic creative process, and she really pulls the curtain back. So
yeah,
she's definitely inspired me over the years, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet there's so many artists, it's insane, and it's so hard to remember them all.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a single from Dirty Rick. 1968 is a single from 2020 about meeting a girl seemingly plucked straight from a groovier time.
A beautiful disgrace. Someplace that I will be the here. Oh, when you whisper in my ear, in my ear, in my ear, in my ear, say. Shake this party off, and we run headlong past the stop. And I can feel your body turn. I don't know when I'm gonna learn, gonna learn, gonna learn, gonna learn. Hey! Oh yeah, take it where you want it. I can't finish what I start. She was 1968, 15's too late. She was wild on me, I had the time, not the place. Yeah, she was 1968, 15's too late. Yeah, she's pulling me back in time. The future will just have to wait.
control.
For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with the vocalist of Toronto alt-rock band Dirty Rick, David Kaufman. We just came back from playing 1968, a single of yours from 2020. How long did it take to write that song?
That's a good question. That was definitely one that took longer for us. It went through a few different iterations before we settled on a final version. So that song started as one of my kind of ideas, even though basically all of the original lyrics that I wrote for that song don't exist anymore except for the bridge. But I wrote the original idea for that song in 2018, and we released it in 2020. So, and it was fully done in 2019. So I'm going to say it probably took about a year from the time that it was first conceived to the time that it was recorded.
And where do the lyrics come from? What would you say they're about, and what are they inspired by?
Well, it's interesting because, again, like where it started and where it kind of went to are a little different places, but, you know, I was traveling in 2018 and I met someone who, as you kind of said, you summed it up pretty well, honestly, in the pre-song there. But I met somebody who was basically plucked right out of the 60s, and with the glasses and with the hair, and kind of reminded me of like a mild-mannered Janis Joplin of sorts. And I was like, that's really interesting. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily like an attraction thing. It was more just a like curiosity kind of thing. And I wrote about, you know, being born in the wrong time and being born in the wrong era. And I've often thought of that about myself. So there's a few different interpretations for sure for that song. And I don't like to divulge too much because I like to let people have their own connections with the song. But, you know, I'm sure it's a relatable experience. You meet someone, you're like, wow, like this person is, you know, from a bygone era of either music or time. And I find that really, really cool. Like, you know, outside of this commercialized vintage thing, like for someone to actually be like living that kind of lifestyle authentically.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Oh, totally. And what do you hope your listeners will take away from the song?
Oh, that's a song that's supposed to be really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I picture it as one of those anthem kind of songs, one of those, like, you know, it's an upbeat, really fun, dancey kind of song. And that's really the only hope that I have for people listening to it, is for them to have fun, you know, maybe, you know, you're in the car and you hear that song, you yell along with it, or, you know, if you're not in the car and you got some room to dance, maybe do a little bit of that. But, that song is, flat out just, you know, a yell along kind of song. And, it's one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah. And now Love in the Doors is your latest song. How long did that song take to write?
Probably about the same amount of time. That song started as Christoph's, our bassist, and he, you know, came up with that funky riff, and he wrote all the lyrics to that song. So that one was more or less, other than, you know, polishing touches and whatnot, pretty much entirely his. And it was recorded at the same time as 1968. I want to say it took a little shorter to write, and it didn't have to go through nearly as much change. So I'm going to say it probably took the same, maybe a little less than a year.
Okay. And what's that song about? I know it's inspired by The Doors Pub.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that song is about making bad decisions. Mm-hmm. That song is about, you know, people going out and thinking you're going to find, you know, true love in a dive bar. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say in 95% of circumstances, that is not how it goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can all kind of associate, or at least a lot of us can associate with those kind of experiences, being young, being kind of dumb, and being a little naive, but also maybe you want to go through that experience at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's my interpretation of the song anyways.
Yeah, yeah. And who did you record and produce that song with? And do you typically record and produce with the same people?
So all of our recording has been, we've done them in batches, and mm-hmm. it's been with different people each time, mm-hmm. Just based on life circumstances and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah. So that group of singles along with, so it was Love in the Doors, 1968, Doomsday, and Toxic Love, those four were with Halo Studios in Hamilton. And the other four were with Justin Melly in Uxbridge. We went out to the Chalet Studios. And, you know, for our next batch, we'll probably do something a little different. And, you know, we enjoyed our experiences with both. It's just, you know, we're constantly looking for different visions, different ways of bringing our sound to life. And, you know, it's, I think that if you're only working with one person, especially at the beginning, especially like when you're, you know, obviously the pro bands kind of have their preferred people. But especially when we were first starting out, you know, it helps to have different perspectives, and it helps to have different, inputs and, you know, different experiences. So some people maybe will, let you kind of have a little more say, and some people say, you know what, I think this is going to be what sounds best, so we'll try this my way and we'll see how it goes. And the reality is we're always looking for something kind of right in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you hope your listeners take away from Love in the Doors?
Yeah, Love in the Doors has always been a fan favorite live.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's definitely like all of our music, really, it's all about having fun.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a bit more of a thinker, I'd say, than 1968. But, from the second that riff drops, like, it's really groovy. It's really fun. You know, I sound like a broken record, but it's really about, you know, getting people to sing along and dance along and have some fun and kind of escape whatever thing they're trying to escape in a positive kind of distraction way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since we're talking about all of your singles, do you have a favorite one?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I would say Doomsday is my favorite, because cool. that was the first song that that kind of started as my idea that then progressed into a Dirty Rick song. And I'm by no means saying that I wrote that song entirely myself. I'm still not capable of that, but I definitely wasn't then. But I sent it off to the guys, and they really massaged it into what I think is our most, it's our most ready song, if you will. Like it's the one that sounds like it belongs on the radio the most. It's the one that,
okay.
People tend to, you know, pick out from the live show as one of their favorites. It's a favorite of most of the guys in the band as well.
Mm-hmm.
It just has this, like, it's got a great story. It's got a great sound. It's again, dancey and fun. And it takes me back to where I was when I first came up with the idea for that song.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that put together definitely makes it my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you feel as though your personal style, but also Dirty Rick's style, has evolved over the years?
It's definitely evolved, you know, by default with some lineup changes, but also just in the way that we approach the the writing and the recording process. It's still about fun, as mm-hmm. I've said a million times, like, again, the broken record. It's still about getting people to move. It's still about getting people to dance. That was, and sing, that was always the goal. But now, you know, we're experimenting with different tones and different sounds, and we're trying to take a little more control of the sound itself, as opposed to, you know, letting, like, let's, you know, see where this goes. Like, we have more of an idea of how we want a song to sound. You know, you play enough shows with a band, you kind of form an identity, and mm-hmm. that identity is subject to change, obviously. But we really like, you know, the message of this band and the, you know, the results. Like, people have fun at our shows, and that's the most important thing to me. And mm-hmm. people enjoy listening to our music, and that's the ultimate compliment as a musician.
Yeah, yeah. So Dirty Rick has begun playing shows again since the COVID restrictions have been lifting, and I know that's sort of been on and off, but how has that been, sort of returning to the stage, returning to performing live? And do you remember the first show that you played back?
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best being back. It's my favorite thing in the world, live music, and either attending it or playing it, you know, it definitely felt like something was missing from my life. And I mean, a lot of things where it was, and still is, a pandemic. And, you know, there were a lot of things that we needed to sacrifice, but, getting back onto the stage, getting back, we've played shows in Toronto and Hamilton. We've played a handful in both. And the first show back was at Sneaky D's in October, and then we played a show at the Corktown in November. We played a handful, a couple in February, and then now we've and in March, and now we've got a couple coming up in April. So we've played quite a few already back. The first show back felt incredible. It felt like, I liken it to a mental health thing, and maybe it was a mental health thing, but it felt like my brain kind of just shifted back to where it was supposed to be. Like, it was slightly ajar, and then getting back on the stage, having all kinds of people there. It was still a seated show, so, you know, maybe not the best, but I'll take a seated show over no show any day. And, you know, the energy in there was amazing, even though people couldn't really dance. We were getting a lot of good feedback. I got to see a lot of people that I'd never, or that I hadn't seen in ages. And just going through the pre-show routine, like, it sounds kind of nuts, but I like, you know, the drive-in for a show. I like picking up the gear at the band house and driving it down and loading it in. Like, you know, I like all of that. It means that there's a show about to be played. And my brain just, you know, it's like a dog. It's like I'm ready to go. Like, oh, you showed me the, you know, you said the word car, and now we're going for a ride in the car. Like, mm-hmm. it's like that pre-show routine that, and, you know, I listen to, you know, some live music on the way. So I'll listen to, like, live recordings of the Doors most commonly. And, like, I love that, like, ritualistic process. Yeah. By which, you know, I end up arriving at the show, and then you play the show, and you know, obviously we did well enough, you know, it's never going to be a perfect show, but we played well, and you get off stage, and you're like, wow, like, did that really just happen? Like, it felt very much like the first time that I had ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Did that really just happen? Like, it's been a year and a half, and we actually got back on stage, and, you know, everybody, that we spoke to after the show had a great time. And so that definitely makes me feel good. You know, it's all about that audience and band interaction, especially for me as a front person. So I missed all of that so much, and it's amazing to have it back. Mm-hmm. And now in the subsequent shows, you know, it becomes about, getting back into that polish and getting back into, you know, maybe some experimentation, and, you know, we've had our own obstacles to kind of deal with in the time since we started playing, again, and like me finishing up school has been the thing for sure. Like I've just been all over the place in my personal life as well. I've moved again since we started playing shows, you know, all this stuff, but I can do all of that stuff better because I have live music again to keep me centered, keep me grounded, keep me, you know, energized and hopeful. And it gives me something to look forward to. Life's mm-hmm. really hard when you don't have that thing to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so you have a couple shows coming up. The closest one is on the 16th. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. So we are playing the Casbah. So Hamilton listeners, we are playing the Casbah on Saturday, April 16th. I guess non-Hamilton listeners too, if you're up for a drive. Mm-hmm. The Casbah is just about the best place for a local band to play it. Hamilton, we haven't played there, I want to say, since 2019. Mm-hmm. It was difficult to get shows there back before the pandemic, just, you know, high demand and all that. And then since, but we finally managed to get one. We're playing with the Commoners. I mentioned them before, but they play like a Southern rock revival. Pretty hard to describe, but they're excellent, and they're on all the streaming services too, so definitely give them a listen, and they're well deserving of it. And we're playing with another friend of mine, Thomas Dukesbury, who moved out to BC, and he's in town for the summer, so he's hoping to play some Hamilton shows. He was in a band called New Mother Nature and the Nares previously before that, and they were one of the first bands that we started playing with when we started playing in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And now he goes by Thomas Dukesbury and New Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a different group of guys that are joining him on stage, but it'll be the same, you know, same energy. I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be a blast from the past. And they're also like a Southern rock kind of vibe. The two of them are going to mesh. I have a feeling they're both going to really enjoy playing with each other. And then we're going to come on last. The show starts at 9 and tickets are available online. If you follow us at Dirty Rick Music on Instagram or the Dirty Rick Facebook page, there's links to buying tickets there. I believe they're also on the Casbah website. I could be wrong about that, but I believe they're there. And yeah, it's going to be a great celebration. Both us and the Commoners have roots in both Toronto and Hamilton. Mm-hmm. So, we played with them at the Horseshoe, to get our Toronto, people out. And now to play with them again in Hamilton, you know, we were catching up after the show at the Horseshoe and we like kind of looked at each other. You know, a few of us from each band were in the room and we all looked at each other like, okay, so we should do that again, right? Like that was so much fun. And I got right on it. I was like, yeah, we're going to play. We're going to play a show, hopefully Casbah. And we got it. So it's going to be great. Obviously, there's multiple. It's Easter weekend. It's also the second night of Passover. So we understand, obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on that day. But if you want to, you know, bring your family. Or if it's a particularly tough time for you as a, you know, as a human, holidays can be difficult for a lot of us. So, you know, if you need some distraction, come out and see some live music Saturday night at the Casbah, 9 o'clock.
Exactly. And you also have a show coming up on the 28th. Can you share any details about that?
Yes. So on the 28th, we're playing at Lee's Palace in Toronto. We haven't played there since 2018. Mm. One of our like first 10 shows would have been there.
Wow.
And it's crazy that we ended up on that stage so early in the band's career, but, we're coming back. We're playing with a band called Soulish. They're the headliner for the night. They are awesome. They are definitely one of the titans of the Toronto local music scene right now. Great energy. And really any band with great energy is a band that I'm going to like, but, we have not had a chance to play with them yet. But our promoter, A Minor, who is run by Mike, he has been putting on shows for us. He's been getting us on show bills since the very beginning, since 2017. So, you know, we've worked our way up with him, and he's, we normally play at Sneaky D's or Hard Luck. With him, we played a few other scattered bars, but now, you know, he approached us, I think in the fall, and was like, hey, you know, we're going to try and get Lee's Palace, and we want you to play with Soulish. Like, we're going to stack this bill. I'm like, all right, awesome. Like, let's do it. And so that's really exciting. We're hoping that people can, you know, come out and see us on a Thursday night. That's April 28th at Lee's Palace. The exact details of that show, time-wise, escape me. I believe doors are at 8 for that one, though. And, yeah, again, there's links in our on our social media to buying tickets for that show. But if you've ever been to Lee's Palace, it's one of the best places for a local band to play in Toronto. So we're really excited that, you know, in our last little while, we've managed to play some pretty awesome rooms with the Horseshoe, and now Casbah and Lee's Palace coming up. You know, it's back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, getting to see live music, like, you know, and then you get it. So get you in the right room too, and the right crowd, and everything just works out. It's the best feeling.
Yeah.
It's the absolute best feeling.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, David. This is great.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me as well. It's always a pleasure to jump on one of your programs.
Mm-hmm, anytime. So everybody listening, you can find the band on all socials and streaming services under Dirty Rick. And you can find David on Instagram as Howlin' Frog. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Dirty Rick. Doomsday is a single the band released in 2019 about partying at the end of the world.
Hey everyone, this is David Kaufman from Dirty Rick, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on Indie 101.5.
Sublime, and it sounds like